This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around. Since I'm working from home, the only possibility for me to be driving home is if I have breakfast with a friend on Thursday. And a couple of weeks out of the month, I do have breakfast with friends on Thursdays. But my normal breakfast today got bumped to next week because my buddy is having physical therapy today. So I just work from home today, and I do have to get back in a half an hour for sure. My beloved may need me to take her to the dentist. So I'm just going to go drive around for a little bit and then go back home and see if she needs me to take her to the dentist. She's having a little trouble with her hip. But today is the day she gets the crown on, so she doesn't want to miss that, obviously. All is well. Things are puttering along. Everything was fine at work this week. There are always things moving. And more, there's always things I can find to do with this crazy AI. We had this situation where we needed to add what we call a fellowship. We need to add a fellowship, and the fellowship was named the Francophone African Fellowship. So it is a collection of African churches, Assemblies of God, African churches in the United States where they speak French, apparently. And so that was fun. But the African Fellowship, the request for it came after the guy who would normally do all this stuff resigned in the buyouts. And so it kind of fell to us to get it done. And he had left us some notes, and there was some stuff in there. And we put some of that stuff in, but it didn't work. And so I had an idea. I went to look at the database and dug around a little bit. I had an idea of what needed to happen, but it was just really nice to be able to go to the source code for that application, download it to my box, point cursor at it, and say, I need to know when these things load, what needs to be done to get a new fellowship to show up in this combo box. And of course, it just ran through all the code, looked at all the database structures, and said, well, it looks like you need the record in this table. And then it said, I went and I looked through all of the database structures, and I don't see anything to automatically add that to this table, so you probably are going to have to insert it manually. And I was like, okay, well, that's what we'll do then, because that's what I was thinking was going to have to be done, because I had taken a look as well. And sure enough, that's what we needed to do. We got it done, and ta-da, you know. So, I mean, it's really just a little bit ridiculous. But it works. It works pretty good. It just works pretty good. I was working with it on another project, and it actually made a mistake at one point. But, you know, humans make mistakes too. And so it had put the name of a field coming back from a table function, except that field was not in that table function. And so I was kind of looking at it, and I was like, okay, that is not validating. So I went and looked. Sure enough, it wasn't there. And so I just told it. I said, okay, in this particular thing, you're referring to this field, but I don't see it coming back. Did I just miss it? And they looked at it and said, nope, you didn't miss it. I just made a mistake. And so we went ahead and fixed that, which, you know, hey, if it can fix its own mistakes, well, okay. So that all is going well. As far as the costumes go, we're kind of in a little hiatus right now. I do have some repairs to do, like the Mr. Potato Head costume. I've got to put some latches on the inside of the shell to hold it tighter so that people potentially can swap out the Mr. Potato Head pieces without the whole shell coming apart. Because as it is right now, it's just held by magnets, and so if it gets the wrong kind of lateral torque on it, it just pops apart, which I can't have it doing that. So that's a real repair job. And then I have Marvin the Martian coming up, I don't know, in about 4 weeks, 5 weeks. And I've got to wrestle that thing out of the basement and get it in my garage so that I can start practicing putting it on and off 2 times a day until, you know, we're ready to do it, because it's a little precarious. I have to stretch out as far as I can stretch this thing above my head, and it's, I don't know, 30 pounds or so-ish, and the leverage is not good on it. But I'll practice with that for a while. I have been having a little trouble with I think it's a tendon in my shoulder that I had pulled when I was working on the goth costume. And so it's still recovering, and it's just, there's one spot when I'm doing the lifting that it twinges a little bit. But I have to see if I can just power through that and get the thing over my head. So I got those to do. And then I think that's all the repairs I have to get done. And then I got to get started on Halloween. So I had ordered 2 different outfits for the Halloween stuff. One to shop in, and then one, you know, to make the presentation in, such as it is. So the one that I got to shop in was supposedly custom fitted to me. I sent them all my measurements, and they got it a little shy. Woo! They got it a little shy on some of the measurements, like for my arms and for the length of my torso. But it came from China, and it was cheap enough that what I'm going to do is I'm just going to split it where it needs to be split, and then I'm going to go ahead and put in the extra pieces. And, you know, I was intending to put it, it's all a one piece. I was intending to put it all back together just as a one piece, but I may just split it and put in the extra pants piece to just put an elastic top on it, or something that will cinch down on my waist and won't go anywhere. So I'll probably do that. And then I have to open up the arms as well, because they got the arms too skinny on it. So I got to get started on those things. And then I have to build the primary display. But I have the dress in for that. So I got to get started on that and get it rigged up. If I get this all done, it's going to be cute. It's just going to be cute. Anyway, so that's that coming. I'm still doing my editing pass, my final editing pass on book 24. I did get in all of my redefined covers, and it's all fine. Maybe the panoramic scene on the final set of 8 books is a little dark, but that stanza of the poem starts with "the darkness drops again," and so it kind of needs to be dark. So I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be fine. And then I'm actually looking forward to getting writing again. If this goes as I expect and I can start writing again in July, the first Still Whispers book is pretty short. So I really think I might be able to get it done in one writing sprint as opposed to two. Technically, one writing sprint is 80,000 words, and that's probably more than will be in this first Still Whispers on the Lord's Prayer, because it's meant just to be short and just an idea and kind of open-ended. And so I'm not going to try to be exhaustive on it. I'm just going to give people suggestions as to the types of things they might think about when it comes to the Lord's Prayer. I think that's going to be fine. I have the domain name stillwhispers.com. I've had it for years and years and years. And since this may be more of a interactive, more of a, you know, what are your ideas type of thing on this, who knows, I may put up a website on stillwhispers.com, and, you know, just have different sections for the different books that I'm going to be writing, and then open up a little discussion board on there and allow people to share their ideas too. We'll see. I just have, you know, kind of these flittering thoughts about some of these things, so who knows. This week I started watching a documentary, and I did finish it, and I will freely admit that the documentary was one of those that I had some interest in learning about because I thought it might be applicable to Still Whisper's machinations. But as I got about halfway into it, I kept thinking, yeah, okay, yeah, this is terrible. Is it just all going to be this way? And I almost just came down to the end of it and, you know, shut it off before I got halfway through it and just went and found something else. But I thought, well, no, maybe I should just finish it. And then in the midst of finishing it, I thought, oh, there you go. This is what we need to talk about. Okay. And then at the end of it, I actually visited the website that they suggested that we go to. Because there are pieces of this that are worth knowing. And there are pieces of this that are worth putting in a larger context. So the name of the documentary is High Class, and it's a documentary about women who have been caught up in the escort services in Las Vegas. And in the theoretical elite escort services. You know, that upper end class where women are making a lot of money a night. You know, we have this kind of, as a society, hopefully not as Christians, but we, as a society, we have kind of a romantic idea about what these escort services entail. And that romantic idea comes from a lot of what media tells us. It comes from a lot of what women who are in this business post on social media. And one of the core ideas that comes out of all that is, oh, well, this is just the type of work that some women choose to do, and we should honor their choices and, you know, celebrate that this is the life that they have chosen. And this documentary, which is available for free on YouTube, High Class, it's called, seeks to show a different side of it. And while it is true that perhaps not every single woman who is involved in the escort services in Las Vegas is in a desperate situation, it was telling that at one point, for all the women that they had gathered together to talk about their experiences, and for whom they ask, did all the women who were in escort services have a pimp that was associated with them? The answer was yes, because there's kind of this idea that, you know, these women are sort of in a group that has a protector over it, and, you know, they're allowed to kind of be their own employers and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the picture that these women painted of this experience was nothing like that. And many of them painted a picture of an experience where they didn't necessarily guide themselves into it. They were just at the wrong place at the wrong time, fell into the wrong crowd, were groomed, were pulled along, and then were told that they had to be prostitutes, and just got sent around to room after room after room. And the picture they paint is of having someone sweep in and pretend to be their protector and pretend to be their provider and be really, really nice to them. And then after they got them all set up in a house and a car and all that sort of thing, then they basically just took them to the clubs and said, okay, this is what you're gonna do. And these men who were pimping them out, of course, had picked women who were beautiful women. And perhaps they had picked women that they knew they were capable of manipulating. But from what was described, I think women in general, I'm backing into my garage, would be hard-pressed not to be controlled in a situation like this. Most of these women were single moms. You know, they had their sons or their daughters with them. The pimp had his people watching their daughter or their son. And the pimp was using extreme psychological pressures on them. If you don't do what I tell you to do, I'm going to kill your family. You know, I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to kill your son. And for those who tried to stand up against these pimps, one of the women had been beaten with a metal pipe. I mean, just terrible, terrible stories. Truly stories of modern slavery. Truly stories of modern slavery. You know, women having a man express an interest in them and becoming convinced that he was their way to accomplish this, that, or the other. And, you know, before they knew it, they were going out every single night and were under orders not to come back until they'd earned $1,000 or $1,500 or $2,500. Going to the hotels, trying to, you know, have a drink in a bar and hopefully get noticed by a man and get picked up by a man. And, you know, basically, if you're a pretty woman in a revealing dress in a bar at a hotel, apparently everybody knows that that's code. And a lot of just really, really sad stories of exploitation. And, you know, they commented, as they've had conversations with people, that certainly people have given them the lines, why didn't you just run away? You know, why didn't you just stop? Because most of the women on this special were in it for years until their pimp was sent to prison or until somebody helped them and they got out. And it's years. And some of them did try to get out. Some of them tried to escape only to have, you know, their pimp show up at their new place, you know, with flowers. And then as soon as they open the door, the flowers drop to the floor and out comes the pipe and they're just savagely beaten. Really terrible stories. Really, really terrible stories. And as I said, as I was getting into the middle of all those stories, I was just like, yeah, I understand what's going on here, and I understand the engines, and I understand the aggression that is in men because of testosterone, and in some men, I understand how the flesh can turn that to something cruel and inhumane. And I can also understand the anxiety that is in women, really, as part of the reproductive systems as well, and how that women could get into those situations and the men who are putting them in those kinds of psychological pressures will know that the fear will paralyze them and the anxiety will paralyze them enough that they'll just do what they're told. I understand how all those reproductive systems contribute to this really terrible outcome. And I understand it's the flesh. And I understand it's spiritual wickedness in high places. But the amazing thing is, when I got to the end of this documentary, and they were talking to some of these women who had been through some of these really, really terrible things, that many of them, the notes that ChatGPT put together for me had this section titled Closing Life After Survival, 3 minutes. I'm supposed to talk about this for 3 minutes. It says the documentary ends on a surprisingly hopeful note. The women who once felt trapped now describe ordinary lives as extraordinary gifts. Family dinners, game nights, mowing the lawn, date nights with their children, simple routines that many people take for granted become symbols of freedom. Several of them have become advocates, educators, and trainers. It's about human dignity. They argue that people who have been exploited still possess immense value, strength, and wisdom. Their experiences did not define them, their recovery did. And perhaps the central lesson of this film is that behind every stereotype is a human being whose story is more complicated than it appears. And the lights of Vegas may hide many things. So, what the notes don't mention, unsurprisingly, is that several of the women at the end give clear testimony that is very much in the Christian domain of how God has helped them and Jesus has forgiven them and loves them. And I mean, very clear testimonies. And yet again, here we have an example of the power of the story that is inherent in Christianity. The power of that story that has a place for everyone at every moment to turn towards Christ and to be made new. And that was the thing I really, really gained from the documentary. It is campaigning. I will tell you right now that the documentary is campaigning to attempt to get new legislation in that establishes penalties and, in fact, makes it a felony to hire a sex worker. And the reason for that is that right now the police simply go after the prostitutes, no matter what. And the prostitutes may be in very terrible situations that are not similar to, but are slavery. They don't say this in the documentary because the word slavery is an incendiary term. But if these women who are being beaten to keep them in line, if these women who are being threatened physically, threatened emotionally, told that their families are going to be killed if they don't cooperate, if that's not slavery, I don't know what is. And these women would talk about the fact that they had to bring home $1,500 a night, and whatever they brought home, they had to give all of it to their pimp. They had no income because they had to give all of it to their pimp, and if they didn't and the pimp found out, he would beat them. Okay, well, if that's not slavery, I don't know what that is. So the only way you really stop that is you don't stop it by arresting the women. You stop it by arresting the Johns who are paying for services. And you can say, well, but it's a woman's right to be doing that. But the fact of the matter is the vast majority, according to this film, the vast majority of the women who are in this trade because they're being forced to be in this trade. And that's exploitation, and it's wrong. And the only way to stop that is to shut off the supply. And by making engaging the services of a prostitute a felony, you might stand a chance of diminishing that. Although, you know, as it stands now, I mean, not only do we have all of the digital pornography online, but we also have all the AI stuff coming online. And, you know, women can be exploited by being put in camera rooms and web streaming rooms just as much as they can be exploited on the streets. It is all corruption. It is all flesh. It's all terrible. But one of the things we can do is, you know, sign a petition and offer some money to help support this cause, because I think they're right that the only way to slow this down, at least for live women walking the streets, is to make it criminal to hire a prostitute, a felony for a man to hire a prostitute. And that in itself may help. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.